Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Friday, July 12th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The school in Tenneke Springs has less than a month to double the size of its student body or risk closing. School board members in the small southeast city are hoping families will move to town and boost the numbers. If the school closes, Tenneke's population may drop further as the few remaining students and their families look elsewhere for an education. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Tenneke Springs is nestled into the side of a fjord on Chichagof Island, about 50 miles north of Sitka. You can only get there by plane or boat. It has a general store, a bathhouse, some lodges, a harbor, a seaplane base, and about 150 full-time residents. Of those residents, five are enrolled in the local public school. That's right, five. And here's the problem.
We need 10 students in order to be considered a school under state law.
Shauna Harper lives in Tenneke. Her 16-year-old son is entering his senior year at the K-12 school. Harper is also on the regional school board that will make the decision whether to keep the school open. In many ways, the stakes of keeping a school open are higher here than in other, less remote parts of the country.
We cannot just put our child on a bus and send them to another school in another district that's close by, especially in Tenneke, because we are so remote that the students have no other alternative rather than to move out of the community or homeschool or take some type of correspondence school.
When a school in Alaska dips below 10 students, it starts losing state funding, sometimes all at once, sometimes over a period of 3 years. It's up to individual districts to make the decision whether to close. The Chatham School District, to which Tenneke belongs, has been in this position before. Harper says twice in the last 20 years, Tenneke's student population has been low enough to consider closing. Both times, the board voted to keep the school open and draw money from its reserves.
But in those other two instances, we had like 9 students. This year, we're looking at 5.
It's a wider gap that might be harder to bridge. And if the school closes,
We would look at going to Gus Davis. Because it is in the district.
The potential exodus of families from Tenneke is just one of the factors that worries residents like Darius Menino.
My wife and I first came to Tenneke in 1996. We were here for maybe 3 years. And we went to, then we were back and forth between here and Juneau.
They came back to Tenneke about 2.5 years ago.
Well, we had a daughter. And so we thought, we wanted to raise her here.
Her name is Isla, and she's 3. Menino says he and his wife want Isla to grow up in a community with generational diversity, a mix of old and young residents.
Each of those groups interact with each other, and I think that, to me, makes a rich community, that those interactions, that's one of the unique parts of Tenneke, is that, you know, the kids have always had to learn to talk to the adults and talk to the older members of the community and vice versa. And
So one worry is the social and cultural impact the school's closure might have. Another concern, the economy.
They are the largest employer in town right now.
The school employs 7 people. It's also the largest consumer of utilities in Tenneke Springs. And Gordon Chu, who chairs the smaller advisory school board in Tenneke, says they've tried a lot of things in the past to keep the school population up. They've reached out to families and surrounding communities. They've advertised in magazines and newspapers. The school even tried to attract foreign exchange students, but that didn't pan out.
The program we were working with found out very late in our enrollment period that we didn't have a hospital, and their program did not allow their foreign exchange students to be so far away from a primary medical facility.
So now they're trying to spread the news that the school enrollment is low in hopes that someone will move their family to Tenneke Springs and boost the numbers. But in a matter of weeks? Well, Chu says that's not as far-fetched as it sounds.
It has happened numerous times before, and some of our greatest assets right now are people that moved here and stayed. We had a family of 5 move out a couple of years ago from Juneau, and they stayed as long as they could, but they had to move on. And we just don't seem to have any aces in the hole this year.
Chu says the situation is dire. But like any Hail Mary pass, you just hope the ball lands in the right place.
Like selling anything, you just have to get the word to the right person. And you never know how that's going to happen.
They have until the end of July. Then the superintendent of the Chatham School District makes a recommendation on whether to close the school. The board is expected to make its decision around August 6th. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
An oral history study of the former Sheldon Jackson School in Sitka is showing that many students thrived in the institution's strict missionary environment. This is in contrast to widely held views that missionary schools serve only to break Alaska Native traditions, culture, and language. While that negative reputation is sometimes well-deserved, Sitka artist Rebecca Polson is learning that Sheldon Jackson had an upside for many Alaska Natives that is not well understood. KCAW's Eric Newman reports.
You know, in a way, it's like not PC, you know, to say, you know, like I went to a mission high school and it was fun.
That's Rebecca Polson, an artist who lives in Sitka and grew up here. For the past year, she's been recording interviews of students and faculty who went to Sheldon Jackson for an oral history project that she's producing about the school. The Alaska Humanities Forum is funding her work. At her house, Polson has a stack of large black and white photographs. They're dated from the early 1900s to 1950s and are pictures of Native American students and white teachers at the school.
Well, and that's the funny thing is in photographs, people usually look so serious, but some of these little girls can't help it.
Yeah.
They're irrepressible.
Yeah.
One of the pictures is of a class of girls lined up on the front lawn holding up barbells for a PE class. In another, a bunch of boys are hovering intently over glass beakers in chemistry class. And in some of the pictures, they look like they're having a lot of fun.
I guess that's been the most surprising thing, is the amount of love for this place, even though, you know, everyone suffered to some extent.
For Polson, it's that contradiction that really makes this history interesting and worth understanding. She says, these interviews have been a way to see through some of the stereotypes of missionary schools, whether they're positive or negative.
And that's the other kind of caveat with Sheldon Jackson, is it was a mission school, and so that's a real heavy, complicated area, because education is empowering, but having your culture taken away or ignored is devastating. And you can't separate those two things.
After I visited Polson, she gave me some of the recordings that she's done so far so I could listen to them. This is an interview with Fred Hope, who was a student there.
But Sheldon Jackson's been good to me. I learned a lot of things that I would never have learned if I went somewhere else. I think the main thing I enjoyed was meeting all these different people from different areas. And you learn to communicate.
This is another of a woman named Rachel James.
After leaving school, we just knew people from all over the state, and it's really great when we travel. We look up old friends and a lot of time just run into them in whatever we're doing.
Polson says it's not a surprise that most of the interviews that she's done have been positive, since the people who had good experiences are probably more likely to want to talk about them.
Yeah, or that's just the reality. The people that we're talking to don't have much bad to say about Sheldon Jackson.
Yeah.
So that's something, you know, to keep in mind, you know, because it wasn't perfect, you know, and it wasn't great, you know, for everybody.
Sheldon Jackson School was established in the early 1900s by Presbyterian missionaries, and over time it was a high school and later a college. It closed in 2007 after going through a series of financial hardships. In 2011, the trustees gave the campus to Alaska Arts Southeast, which runs the Sitka Fine Arts Camp. Rebecca Polson is continuing to gather oral histories of Sheldon Jackson. Her project will also include video recordings and a written narrative. Still, she describes it as a partial history. It's complex, she says, and is a story that she's piecing together through the living memories of those who are still around. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Eric Newman.
Polson and her collaborator Alice Smith are continuing to do interviews about Sheldon Jackson. They invite graduates and staff to contact her, whether they had positive or negative experiences, at 747-3448. A photo from the story can be found on our website, kcaw.org. A deadly fire engulfed a home off Ketchikan's South Tongass Highway Thursday morning. Neighbors say the flames were accompanied by the sound of exploding ammunition. KRBD's Sean Carlson and Marco Torres were on the scene and compiled this report.
One woman is dead and a home burnt beyond repair after a fire on Force Avenue Thursday morning. Katrina Calvin, who owns the property with her husband Brian, escaped from the house with her 2-year-old child. The cause of the fire is not yet known. More details should be available pending investigation by the state fire marshal. Dozens of friends, family, and neighbors watched from the street as members of the South Tongass Volunteer Fire Department battled the blaze throughout the morning. By the time the fire was put out by noon, all that remained was the smoldering frame of the house and the stone mantle of a fireplace. South Tongass Volunteer Fire Department Chief Steve Rideen says the 911 call came in around 9 a.m. When firefighters arrived on scene, the house was already engulfed. A boat, truck, and detached garage also were damaged. But it was sometime after emergency responders arrived, Rideen says, that they learned about the woman still inside.
I was probably 15 minutes into the incident that I found out that there was a possible person unaccounted for. At that time, we assessed the building. The structure was not stable enough to send anybody in. We eventually found a person deceased in the back corner bedroom of the lower unit.
The Calvins declined to speak on the record for this story, but friends and neighbors confirmed that the downstairs of the house was rented out. Firefighters on the scene said they had no information about the dead woman and will not release information until the state fire marshal completes its investigation. Firefighters prevented anyone on the scene from getting close to the smoldering remains of the house due to fears of imminent collapse.
To aid in the investigation of the fire, South Tongass Volunteer Fire Department officials have asked that any photos of the fire be sent to them. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or you'd like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.